Well, we're continuing with our Nectar of Devotion study from the Temple Room because it is Sunday, and Sunday is the Lord's Day. Yes. So, all right, so, okay, we got that. Let me just put this on mute so people can't hear me. Okay. Jai Yurada Madhuva Kunyabihari. Jai Yurada Madhuva Kunyabihari. Gopi jana madhava iti paradhari. Gopi jana balaba iti paradhari. Yasunanandana braja jano ranjana. Yasunanandana braja jano ranjana. Yamuna tira manachari. Yamuna Tiravana Chaudhri. Jai Randhu Madhuva Kundali Khaudhri. Jai Randhu Madhuva Kunyabihari. Gopi jana balabha yidi bodhidhari. Gopi jana balabha Giri Padadhari. Yasunanandana braja jano randahuna. Yasunanandana braja jano ranjana. Jamuna tira vanachari. Yamuna tira vanachari. Jaya radhu madhuva kundavihati. Jai Radhu Madhuva Kunjabihari. Madhuva Kunjabihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidakacharya All Sutta Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhayachananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada ki jai, ISKCON founder Acharya. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantagoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Param se kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sridvaita Gadadha. Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath, Shyam Kundarada Kunda Kiri, Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturadam Kijai, Jagadadasami Kijai, Yamunabai Kijai, Shimati Lassi Devi Kijai, Samveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Sama Veda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bhakta. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. Sanama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutle Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Dejatarni. So Om Magana Timidandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Biditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torch light of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're going to continue with our study of nectar devotion. And for those who are online, have been following us. Oh, good, we got more. What's that? Get rid of what? Oh, what column? Hold on, I have to help. What column? Oh, that, just go in the middle. Just take it in the middle and just press the left. No, go in the middle here. Yeah. And press the left key and go down. All righty. So, before nectar devotion, we chant this prayer to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, one of the prayers from the Goswami Ashtaka. Nada Shastra Vicharana Ganipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajanao Mandena Matoliko Mande Rupa Sanatano Raghu Yago Shijiva Gopalako. So, read the translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Gosamis, namely Sri Sanatana Gosami, Sri Rupa Gosami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So we're going to read from the chapter Spontaneous Devotional Service. We're halfway through the chapter. And there's two ways to understand spontaneous devotional service. The direct Sanskrit for this is Raghunuga. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, for those of you who were listening to my class yesterday, there's two ways to understand the use of the word Raghunuga. Anuga means to follow. So Raghunuga means one follows one's spiritual impulses or taste in devotional service. So the two ways to understand it is that if you say someone is on the Raghunuga platform, it may indicate they're on the higher stages of sadhana bhakti. Because sadhana bhakti, which is bhakti in practice, is comprised of two aspects. One aspect is vaidhi, rules and regulations, and the second aspect is Raghunuga, spontaneity. So in the sadhana platform, which is the beginning platform, it's not like, it's a high platform, of course, all devotional service is a high platform, but it's a beginning platform of devotional service. So when we talk about Raghunuga Bhakti in the sadhana category, we're talking about like a little bit more advanced than just following the rules and regulations. In other words, one is still following the rules and regulations, but spontaneously, as we mentioned last night, getting up for Mangalarti spontaneously, not because they won't get prasadam if they don't get up for Mangalarti. We used to do that in the early days of the movement, that if you didn't get up for Mangalarti, no prasadam, or maybe half a day fast. And if you didn't come at all in the morning program, full day fast. So that's called Vaidhi Bhakti. But in Raghunuga, you get up. It's like Prabhupada. Prabhupada was always up. Prabhupada wasn't on a lower stage, of course, but Prabhupada was spontaneous. So, and then also on the sadhana stage of Raghunuga, one is also beginning to recognize one's spiritual relationship. That is, whether one is in friendship relationship, dasha ras, sakhi ras, vatsalya ras, or madhurya ras, or the different relationships in the spiritual world. And then one begins to follow in the same mood as a particular resident of Vrindavan. So that's one understanding. I've just categorized or explained one understanding of Raghunuga. However, when one is a pure devotee, one also is experiencing Raghunuga. But you're not on the Raghunuga platform because you're on the platform of prema, but you're still following your rag. So it's sometimes very confusing, this particular chapter of the Nectar of Devotion. You know, people are thinking, well, is it referring to one of the platforms? And probably goes back and forth in this chapter too, as you'll see. You know, sometimes, which we're going to read today, Prabhupada talks about, or Rupa Goswami into Prabhupada's commentary, talks about the gopis, and other times he talks about someone who is following the rules and regulations. So the meaning of the word Raghunuga is someone who follows their rag, you know, their impulse or emotions or feelings or nature like that. So, but when it's used as a particular level of devotional service, it's the higher stage of sadhana. Everyone understands that? Very, very important to understand that point. So sometimes it may be a very confusing reason that reading this chapter. Now, and actually Raghunuga, the Raghunuga attraction or impulse or following that one feels can be categorized in terms of one's relationship or sensual attraction. Relationship means, you know, you have some particular relationship with Krishna that impels you. I'm a Krishna's servant. That's relationship. Or I am Krishna's gopi. Of course, it's hard for me to say that. Anyway, I don't look like one. So that's relationship. You know, who I am. But sensual attraction means I hear Krishna's flute. You understand? So two things can be impetuses for the Raghunuga attraction to Krishna. Okay, so now we're going to read about the gopis. The lusty attitude of the gopis does not refer to any sort of sex indulgence, but it is actually a sex indulgence of this world is a perverted reflection of the lusty attitude of the gopis. Srila Rupa Goswami explains that this lusty desire refers to the devotee's particular attitude of association with Krishna. Every devotee in his perfectional stage has a spontaneous attraction to the Lord. This attraction is sometimes called the lusty desire of the devotee. The lust is the devotee's excessive desire to serve the Lord in a particular capacity. So that's relationship, remember? I just mentioned that Raghunuga is based on two aspects of Raghunuga. One is relationship, and what is the other one? Does anyone remember? Starts with an S. Don't remember. Sensual attraction. Krishna's food. Yeah, like Krishna's food. One is the relationship. This is what's being described here. Devotee's excessive desire to serve the Lord in a particular capacity. That's relationship. I want to serve the Lord. I want to cook for the Lord. I want to dress the Lord like the pujaris. That's the Raghunuga that comes from the relationship. And from the sensual attraction, even for the practicing devotee would be, oh, I see Krishna and I want to hear his flute or something like that. That's it. So we're going to read, now we're just reading about relationship under the Raghunuga heading. I think it's really interesting. It's really important to hear these things described because sometimes it's extremely unclear if you just read here. I remember the first time I read Nectar Devotion, I didn't understand what was going on. The lust is the devotee. All right. Such a desire seems to be a desire for enjoying the Lord, but actually the endeavor is to serve the Lord in that capacity. For example, a devotee may be desiring to associate with the Supreme Person, God, as a coward friend. He will want to serve the Lord by assisting him in controlling the cows in the pasturing ground. Remember, it's all relationship right here. This may appear to be a desire to enjoy the company of the Lord, but actually it is spontaneous love, serving him by assisting in managing the transcendental cows. And that would be nice, wouldn't it? To be with Krishna, like in the pasturing grounds, and just like, wow. Can't think of anything better than that. All right, now we're going to go on to sensual attraction. You have that there? What? Well, it's the next paragraph. The heading is not there. It's the extreme desire. You see that? The next paragraph starts over with the extreme desire. You see it? Go down. Actually you have to go down because you went backwards. The next paragraph begins with the lusty attitude. Go down. Go down, down, down. The page down. Hit it with the left key. Yeah. And page. Hit it with the left key. No, not like that. Put the arrow in the middle. Hit the left key. Whoops. What's that? Close that. Sorry about those online. Yeah, that's it. Page down to the paragraph that starts this extreme desire. Just page down. Did you find it? Wait. Stop. Gotta go down. Whoops. Anyway, why don't we just read? In the 10th canto, 87. Anyway, it's better we just read right now. Oh, yeah. It should be right now. Sensual attraction. Okay. All right, sorry for those online. We had a little glitch here. All right, so now we're going to talk about sensual attraction, the heading of sensual attraction within the subheading of spontaneous devotional service. Okay, maybe I should ask the question again. What are the two branches of spontaneous devotional service? Relationship and sensual attraction. Okay, good. Now we're going to read about sensual attraction. The other portion was about relationship. You know, when can I serve the Lord herding the cows? When can I serve the Lord holding the Lord like a little baby? When can I serve the Lord by dancing with him? Of course, if I was to dance with the Lord, I'd probably step on his feet. It wouldn't be good for Krishna at this point. So, sensual attraction. That's why we don't want to be sahajas. Because if we actually project our material situation upon the realm of the absolute, it actually is funny. It's stupid and it's funny. That's what the sahajas do. You know, sometimes you got these men who put lipstick on their faces, on their lips, of course, and they think that they're going to be gopis. It's a very humorous thing, but it's sad because people are imitating. So this is sensual attraction. The extreme desire to serve the Lord is manifest in the transcendental land of Braja. And it is specifically manifested among the gopis. The gopis' love for Krishna is so elevated that for our understanding it is sometimes explained as being lusty desire. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj, has explained the distinction between lusty desire and the service attitude in this statement. This is very important. Lusty desire refers to the desire to gratify one's personal senses, and transcendental desire refers to the desire for serving the senses of the Lord. And I'm going to give an example of both in a second. In the material world, there's no such thing as a lover's wanting to please the senses of his beloved. Actually, in the material world, everyone wants mainly to gratify his own personal senses. The gopis, however, wanted nothing at all but to gratify the senses of the Lord, and there is no instance of this in the material world. Therefore, the gopis' ecstatic love for Krishna is sometimes described by scholars as being like the lusty desire of the material world, but actually this should not be taken as a literal fact. It is simply a way of trying to understand the transcendental situation. And so let me give an example of material lusty desire in relationship to Krishna. And, of course, that's our old friend, Sarpanaka. Everybody's heard of Sarpanaka before. Sarpanaka, for those who haven't heard, she's a lady with the long nails. That's what Sarpanaka means. She saw Lord Ram and Lakshman in the forest, the Dandakaranya forest. And she was a Rakshasini. So she had the power to fly around, change her form at will. And when she saw Lord Ram, she became lusty after him. And this was not the same as the gopis' lust. So she landed, came in for a landing, and she changed her form to that of a beautiful girl. The only thing she couldn't change was her big belly. That's described in the Mahabharata. And they were mine, I'm sorry. She was able to change everything else except for the beer belly that she had. Anyway, so she comes before Lord Ram and says, I really love you. Lust. It was just lust. I want to enjoy you. So that's not like the gopis are thinking, that they want to enjoy Krishna. They want to give Krishna enjoyment. So anyway, so she, and Ram says to her, that my brother's here, Lakshman, and his wife is not here, And I have a wife here, it really wouldn't work out well for you. So she goes to Lakshman, and Lakshman says, if you have association with me, you'll simply become a servant, because I'm a servant of my brother. So better you go back to my brother, and he'll soon forget that thin-waisted lady. Because Sarpanaka had a fat waist. Anyway, sorry, challenged. So so she goes back to Ram and she discovers that they're just joking with her. And she gets really angry and envious of Sita Devi, and she goes to kill Sita Devi. And Ram says, Lakshman, don't ever joke with ladies again. And so Lakshman comes out and chops off different parts of her body. Ugh. But she actually had a big nose, so she actually looked better without that part of the nose. So Lakshman comes out. And then she goes, of course, then she ultimately goes to her brother Ravan and instigates him. But the point, the reason I'm telling this story is because that's lusty desire for Krishna, which is not spiritual. However, in her next life, she became Kubja. And when she became Kubja in Krishna's pastime, she also had that lusty desire. It wasn't a pure spiritual desire towards Krishna. And Krishna straightened up her back. And Krishna associated with her, and she became cured of her lusty desire by doing that. So that's the difference. So you can really see clearly with Kubja and with Sarpanaka what it means to have a lusty desire, even relationship to Krishna. So you could see the difference between pure devotional service and motivated devotional service, wanting to enjoy Krishna, wanting to enjoy the spiritual master, wanting to enjoy the prasadam. Of course, we should enjoy, but anyway. But then, the enjoying spirit. Enjoyment is there. The gopis are certainly enjoying, but that's not their motivation. Their motivation is to give Krishna enjoyment. But they are enjoying. Even the feelings of separation are the topmost enjoyment, but there's no motivation there to do that. Whereas Kubja and Sarpanaka, their motivation was just to squeeze enjoyment out of Krishna. So try to understand that. It's a very important point. That this lusty desire of the gopis has nothing to do with self-centeredness. All other types of relationships are based to a certain extent or fully on self-centeredness. You know, even enjoyment in the mode of goodness, like today is very pretty outside. I went outside, I thought how pretty. But I was thinking, you know, how I am enjoying out here. Oh, it's so nice. I'm enjoying the cool breeze. I'm enjoying the sunshine. And then when it's raining or cold, I'm not enjoying. So that is like a lust right there. So we have to be able to distinguish this lust from love. So someone like Prabhupada, all they're thinking of, they're not thinking at all about their own enjoyment. They're just thinking about giving Krishna enjoyment. It's amazing. I mean, it's hard for me to conceive of it, but it's actually their consciousness. Great devotees up to the standard of Uddhava are very dear friends of the Lord, and so they desire to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. So the gopis' love for Krishna is certainly not material lusty desire. Otherwise, how could Uddhava aspire to follow in their footsteps? And of course, Uddhava, not only did he want to follow in their footsteps, but he wanted to take birth as grass or creepers in Vrindavan so that they would step on him, the gopis would step on him. And he did. Actually, there's a place at Govardhan called Uddhava Kund, where there's a very old temple that's called the Uddhava Bihari Temple, whereas actually a friend of mine runs that temple. He must be about 90-something years old by this point. His name is Giriraj, and his father did 1,000 parikramas around Govardhan to get him as a son. In other words, before having a relationship with his wife, he went 1,000 times around Govardhan. And then he had this great devotee as his son. And this devotee, he sits quite old, and he sits and reads Shastra and takes care of the people come to take darshan every day. Pretty interesting. And Uddhava resides there on the grass in that area. It's quite a special area. You're all invited to come when we're able to go to India. Another instance is Lord Chaitanya himself. After accepting the sannyasa order of life, he was very, very strict in avoiding association with women. But still, he taught, there's no better method of worshiping Krishna than that conceived by the gopis. Thus, the gopis' method of worship of the Lord, as if impelled by lusty desire, was praised very highly, even by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This very fact means that although the attraction of the gopis for Krishna appears to be lusty, it is not in the least bit material. Unless one is fully situated in the transcendental position, the relationship of the gopis with Krishna is very difficult to understand. Because their enthusiasm was just to please Krishna. And if something would please Krishna, even if it would make them miserable, they wanted to do it. So there's no self-interest at all. Other than the fact that their self-interest was perfectly dovetailed with the interest of the Supreme, but no self-interest as we know self-interest. But because it appears to be just like ordinary dealings of young boys and girls, it is sometimes misinterpreted to be like ordinary sex of this material world. Unfortunately, persons who cannot understand the transcendental nature of the love affairs of the gopis and Krishna take it for granted that Krishna's love affairs with the gopis are mundane transactions, and therefore they sometimes indulge in painting licentious pictures in some modernistic style. In other words, they depict Krishna as very lusty, and they sometimes depict Radharani, you know, depicting her transcendental body in a very improper way. On the other hand, the lusty desire of Kubja, actually Prabhupada talks about this, described by the learned scholars as being almost lusty desire. Kubja was a hunchback woman who wanted Krishna with great ecstatic love, but her desire for Krishna was almost mundane, and so her love cannot be compared to the love of the gopis. Her loving affection for Krishna is called kamapraya, or almost like the gopis' love for Krishna. It was like a reflection of the gopis' love for Krishna. But it was for her own desire. Now, of course, we understand that, before we go into the next chapter, that practically all of us, unless we're pure devotees, are serving Krishna because something to do with ourselves, our own desires. So we have to be honest about that. you know, I'm serving Krishna because I like the taste of pakoras or something like that. Which I haven't eaten a pakora in how long? Like about 20 years. Anyway, I'm serving Krishna because, well, I get to play with all my computers and do all this cool stuff online. I'm serving Krishna because I get to travel, and now that I can't travel, I'm thinking of not serving. Anyway, Krishna tests us like this. You know, Krishna tests us because sometimes we're serving Krishna for a particular reason, and Krishna takes away that reason. And Krishna just wants to see if we still want to serve him. Okay, so we'll go on to chapter 16. You have that there? Yeah. Spontaneous devotion further described. And here, there's more details about this. This is actually quite nice. We get into some of the rasas here. Relationship. In the attitude of the denizens of Vrindavan, such as Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, is to be found the ideal transcendental concept of being the father and mother of Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. Factually, no one can become the father or mother of Krishna, but a devotee's possession of such transcendental feelings is called love of Krishna in a parental relationship. In other words, you can't really become the mother or father of Krishna because Krishna's never born. But you can have the relationship of mother or father with Krishna. Although, ontologically, that's a big word, by the nature of Krishna and by the nature of us, we can never actually be the cause of the appearance of Krishna. The Vrishnis, Krishna's relatives at Dwarka, also felt like that. So spontaneous love for Krishna in the parental relationship is found both amongst the denizens of Dwarka, who belong to the dynasty of Vrishni, the Yadu dynasty, and among the inhabitants of Vrindavana. Spontaneous love of Krishna, as exhibited by the Vrishnis and the denizens of Vrindavan, are eternally existing in them. In the stage of devotional service, where regulative principles are followed, there is no necessity of discussing this love, for it must develop of itself at a more advanced stage. Now here, Prabhupada is making a reference to Vaidhi Bhakti. And if one is really into the rules and regulations, and you have pure devotees who are really into the rules and regulations, who never really go to the stage of Raghunuga. Like the residents in the Vaikuntha planets, they're generally into just being very strict rules and regulations. Krishna's God, you got to worship him, behave yourself. There's like this story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopa Kumar, who was a coward boy, went to Vaikuntha, and he was ready to rush up to the Lord and just like give him a big hug and kiss, you know. You know, it was really out of place. Actually, in the United States Congress, something just happened like that too. One of the Congress ladies hugged one of the men. Completely out of place. So in the same way, that's because they are actually on the platform of rules and regulations. Or let's expand that a little bit more. They're on the platform of awe and reverence, appreciating God. You know, we have to worship God. This is our service. Instead of just like throwing all caution to the winds like the residents of Vrindavan do, and they have a very thick and thin relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada here says, following Rupa Goswami, there's no necessity of discussing the love, this love that is referring to those who follow just regulated principles, for it must develop of itself at a more advanced stage. So we are meant to, at a certain stage, advance to a spontaneous platform, not just rules and regulations. But that doesn't mean we give up the rules and regulations. It means we follow the rules and regulations, as I mentioned before, spontaneously. And we also follow the rules and regulations for the reason of setting, what, a good example for others. As Krishna says in the Gita, yad yad acharati shrestas tat tat evaituro janaha. Very important point here. So eligibility for spontaneous devotional service. So if you want to become spontaneous, that is, if you are already following strictly, persons desire to follow the footsteps of such eternal devotees of the Lord, as the Vrishnis and Vrindavan denizens are called Raganuga devotees. Now here Prabhupada is referring to the stage of Raganuga, which is the higher stage of sadhana, remember? So Prabhupada's flipping back and forth between, you know, the eternally liberated devotees and those devotees on the higher stage of sadhana practice. These Raganuga devotees do not follow the regulated principles of devotional service very strictly. In other words, they don't follow them, but they automatically follow them. They're not following them for rules. They're not breaking the rules either. It's not that, you know, okay, now I'm on the Raganuga platform, bring out some marijuana or something like that. Help me meditate better on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they want to follow strictly. I mean, that like they only eat food cooked by devotees because they have an attraction for Krishna. But by spontaneous nature, they become attracted to some of the eternal devotees such as Nanda and Yashoda. This is what we mentioned before. And they try to follow in their footsteps spontaneously. There's a gradual development of the ambition to become like a particular devotee, and this activity is called Raganuga. So that's the other definition of Raganuga right here. So in other words, let's say they see, let's use Daruka, one of Krishna's servants, who fans Krishna. You know, he fans Krishna in different ways. So they just become enamored by the way he's fanning Krishna, just thinking, I wish I could help him. Not that I want to become Daruka, because that's also impersonalism. But I want to help him fan Krishna. I also want to assist him in that particular endeavor. Maybe bring him the fan. Oh, Rishikesh. Maybe bring him the fan or wash his feet. You know, serving what's called the Ragatmaka devotee. Now, that's another term that's important to understand. A Ragatmaka devotee is an eternal liberated associate like Subal, like Sudam, like Daruka, like Yashodamayi, like any of the close gopis, the Astasakis. And they are called Ragatmaka devotees, and also Rupa Mandri and Guna Mandri and all those other devotees too. They're Ragatma, that means those whose Atma is Rag, or attraction for serving Krishna. Their very soul. You can't separate it from their very being. In other words, they have no separate identity other than their Rag. And Raganuga is someone who follows one of those Ragatmaka devotees. Anuga means to follow. Very important to understand. So there is a gradual development of the ambition to become like a particular devotee, and this activity is called Raganuga. We must always remember, however, that such eagerness to follow in the footsteps of the denizens of Braj, Vrindavan, is not possible unless one is freed from material contamination. Here's the caveat. A prerequisite. In the regulative principles of devotional service, there is a stage called anarta nivritti, which means the disappearance of all material contamination. Sometimes someone is found imitating such devotional love, but factually he is not freed from anarthas or unwanted habits. It has been seen that a so-called devotee proclaims himself a follower of Nanda Yashoda or the gopis, while at the same time his abominable attraction for mundane sex life is visible. Such a manifestation of divine love is mere imitation, has no value. When one is actually spontaneously attracted to the loving principles of the gopis, there will be found no trace of any mundane contamination in his character. That's interesting. So, you know, there we can relate it to that verse in the Upadeshamrita. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, udarapashta vegam. That one is able to tolerate the pushings that come just from having a material body. Just like sometimes, you know, a pure devotee may be hungry, but he tolerates it. Because just having a physical body, there's certain pushings and pullings that come. The anger, tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. So this is a very important prerequisite. Therefore, in the beginning, everyone should strictly follow the regulated principles of devotional service according to the injunctions of the scriptures and the spiritual master. Only after the stage of liberation from material contamination can one actually aspire to follow in the footsteps of the devotees in Vrindavan. So in other words, let me give you some hope. even if you're feeling, you know, the impulses, but if you're able to control them and not give in to them, then you're actually freed from material contamination at that point. If you can be sure, 100% sure, that you're not going to give in to your impulses. Because the body will naturally have impulses. Like I said, you still have your all your different aspects of the body, you know. You get thirsty, isn't it? You get thirsty, you get hungry, you know, so, oh my God. I remember in the old days, nobody would drink water in the temple. And now it's become, everybody needs their own bottle. Yeah, when I joined the movement, nobody would think of, like, bringing in these. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Now you're older. We can do it. So, so there is hope. If one's able to tolerate the pushings, you know, Vacho Vega, Manasa Krodha Vega, Jiva Vega, Udara Pashta Vega, and know that they're not going to give in to them, and be engaged in Krishna service using the intelligence, it's called Buddhi Yoga, then you can begin to think about the Raghunuga platform. It is said by Srila Rupa Goswami, when one is actually liberated from material contamination, he can always remember an eternal devotee of Vrindavan in order to love Krishna in the same capacity. And developing such an aptitude, one will always live in Vrindavan, even within his mind. The purport is that if it is possible, one should go and physically be present at Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, and be engaged always in the service of the Lord, following the devotees in Brajadam, the spiritual realm of Braj. If it is not possible, however, to be physically present at Vrindavan, one can meditate anywhere upon living in that situation. Wherever he may be, one must always think about life in Brajadam and about following the footsteps of a particular devotee in the service of the Lord. So that's why devotees or Prabhupada had devotees go from time to time, not stay in the Holy Dham, to go to the Holy Dham, because it cements an impression in your heart, in your mind, so that you're always thinking about it. I know Aditya would go every year for the retreats, right? And now you're feeling like lamenting that you can't go this year. All of us are thinking, and actually I'm planning out, not to go, but I wish I could go. I'm planning out how, on the particular days that we're celebrating during Kartik, to do some presentations with pictures, you know, about Brajmando Parikrama, so everybody can get the opportunity to go on a Brajmando Parikrama. But it's important to go at least once in a lifetime. Like the Muslims, you know, they go, isn't it? And they go to the Kaaba at least once in a lifetime. That's a rule for every Muslim. To go Mecca, Medina, to do this whole Hijra once in a lifetime. Because it cements their relationship with Muhammad. You know, how he went to Medina and then he came back to Mecca and conquered Mecca. So it's important. Or you have the Jewish people, where they go to Jerusalem. And the Christians, they go to Bethlehem. And it really cements their whole concept of devotion, a personal concept of devotion. Because personal concept is very important. And then so when you go to the Brajmando Parikrama, you actually hear about what Krishna did in each place. And it's simply amazing. You hear like, and it actually brings Krishna, I wouldn't say down to earth, but really into the forefront of your consciousness. You actually see where Krishna slid down the hill with his friends. You know, there's actually a slide somewhere where Krishna slid down the hill. You see where Krishna danced on the heads of the Kaliya serpent. You see where Krishna ate the dirt and Mother Yashoda chastised him, Brahmananda got. You see where Krishna did his rasa. I mean, you see all these things. And it's something that really, anyway, is the foundation of your devotional service, to see these places. So a devotee who is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, who is constantly engaged in devotional service, should not manifest himself even though he has attained perfection. This is actually an important point. The idea is that he should always continue to act as a neophyte devotee as long as his material body is there. In other words, he makes believe he's a neophyte devotee to set a good example for others. activities and devotional service. Maybe if they need any help with that, you know, see if they need help. Activities and devotional service under regulative principles must be followed even by the pure devotees. Here's Prabhupada's statement that the pure devotees even have to follow regulative principles. But when he realizes his actual position in relationship with the Lord, he can, along with the discharging of regulative service, think within himself of the Lord under the guidance of a particular associate of the Lord and develop his transcendental sentiments in following that associate. In other words, externally, you're acting just like you did before. And nobody can tell the difference. You're just acting like you're a neophyte, getting up for Mangal Arati, eating prasadam. Of course, eating prasadam. Managing the temple, managing your GBC zone. And you just like make believe that you're down on earth, you know. In this connection, one should be careful about the so-called Siddha Pranali. The Siddha Pranali process is followed by a class of men who are not very authorized and who have manufactured their own way of devotional service. They imagine that they have become associates of the Lord simply by thinking of themselves like that. This external behavior is not at all according to the regulative principles. The so-called Siddha Pranali process is followed by the Prakriti Sahaja, a pseudo-sect of so-called Vaishnavas. So now I'll explain that in a second when I finish this paragraph. In the opinion of Rupa Goswami, such activities are simply disturbances to the standard of the way of devotional service. So Siddha Pranali basically is a process by which a guru or someone who's acting as a guru or someone who may not even be qualified to be a guru, but someone who basically makes believe that you are on a higher platform than you were on, and he tells you who you are in the spiritual world and what's called Ekadasha Bhava, the 11 aspects of your personality in the spiritual world, what you look like, the color of your dress, you know, what your service is. That's called Siddha Pranali. And you'll find that, I mean, that if you're a pure devotee and if your guru is a pure devotee, yes, in that case it may be applicable. But this is not something that is allowed by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, nor by Srila Prabhupada in this Siddha Pranali process. So anyway, so we find many devotees get cheated by this particular so-called procedure. They go to Radhakund and they find a Babaji who tells them, I know who you are in the spiritual world. And the reason you're not advanced in devotional service is because your guru's not advanced. You can only advance as much as your guru. Yeah, that's the reason I'm having all these material desires. It's my guru's fault. Kind of funny, isn't it? So, but now I will give you this mercy. Close your eyes. You are Gopi. And your name is, let's find some Monday night, Susie Gopi. No, Bollywood Devi Dasi. Anyway, so, you know, they don't do it crazy like that. But, you know, but they give some name of the Gopi, and your service is doing this. So once upon a time, there were a bunch of devotees who approached one of those Babajis, and they got that Babaji initiation from him, whatever it was, Siddha Pranali. And then they compared notes with each other afterwards, and they found out they all had the same name in the spiritual world, the same service. So it's a good business. You know, I could do really well for myself if I would do that with devotees. You know, just say, you know, look, I'm going to tell you, Kunjabihari, I'm going to tell you who you are in the spiritual world. The reason I gave you the name Kunjabihari, because you're really Kunjabihari Manjari. In the spiritual world, you're a young girl, about 12 years old, and you help with the Radha and Krishna and the Kunj, you know, the bushes of Vrindavan. So you should meditate on that while you're chanting Japa. Anyway, no, don't do that. So they do stuff like that. I'm not just joking. And very sentimental people, they get trapped. You go to Radhakund, Shyamakund, and you will find a whole bunch, especially Western people, actually a lot of Russians, you'll find a whole bunch of people there, and they're gopis, you know. Anyway, sure don't look like gopis, but they're gopis. So, anyway, so you got to really be careful. Prabhupada cautioned, at one point, Prabhupada said, nobody should go on Parikrama around Vrindavan unless they're guided by an older, advanced devotee with them, because it's very dangerous. You can get misled very easily. Srila Rupa Goswami, we're going to finish this section up, and then we'll take questions, maybe. Yeah. Srila Rupa Goswami says that a learned acharyas recommend that we follow the regulator principles even after the development of spontaneous love for Krishna. According to the regulative principles, there are 9 departmental activities, as described above, these Navabhakti, and like begin with hearing, chanting, remembering, as described above, and one should specifically engage himself in the type of devotional service of which he has a natural aptitude. That means if you're good at chanting, if you're good at hearing, if you're good at serving, Hare Krishna, good to see you. Then you do that. You're good at addressing the deities. You do that. Whatever, you're good at managing, good at business, you do it for Krishna. For example, one person may have a particular interest in hearing. Another may have a particular interest in chanting. Another may have a particular interest in serving in the temple. So these are any of the other 6 different types of devotional service: remembering, serving, praying, engaging in some particular service, being in a friendly relationship, or offering everything in one's possession, should be executed in full earnestness. In this way, everyone should act according to his particular taste. That's a good instruction for us. So, any questions about anything we said in class? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which happens, they would come to Mangalarti because they really felt like
they want to.
And like every day they would feel like it, or like maybe some days they would be doing something else.
Well, some days, that, you know, depending on what Krishna wants. You know, I'll give you an example. Just like we have, anyway, a young couple here that's getting to know each other. And they're always together, and they look forward to being with each other. That's Raghunuga, but it doesn't end. It's not like, sometimes, anyway, there's this song in America about a boy and a girl spontaneously, well, I'm not going to sing, I guess, getting to know you, you know. So, in the material world, in the beginning stage, there's this, like, wow, rush. And then, after a while, it settles down to just normal life, and then boredom. And then you're just doing it at... Actually, this is really interesting. I just thought it was something really funny. That material relationships are like, you know, you got spontaneity in the beginning and then regulated principles afterwards. I never thought about it before. But, you know, like, you, when you first get married or plan to get married, it's just like stars in your eyes, like, oh, this pretty girl or handsome man or something like that. And then you just stay with the person because that's the rules and regulations, you know, out of Dharma. So it's actually, isn't that true? I mean, it's like the opposite. In Krishna consciousness, is you start with the regulated principles, then after a while, it's spontaneous, you know. Like eating, so, you know, eating is spontaneous when one's hungry. But let's say if you were hungry, here's another example, interesting example. Let's say you were like Kumbhakarna. You don't know Kumbhakarna. He was a big guy. And a really big guy. And he would eat so much there wouldn't be any food left over for anyone else. So he had to get the benediction. Ultimately, the first benediction, he was going to sleep forever, but then his brother interceded, and he only woke up every 6 months to eat. So he had insatiable appetite, or even Bhimsen, but Bhimsen wasn't that bad like Kumbhakarna. that it's just someone who's always hungry. That's what it means to be in Raganuga platform. That's amazing, isn't it? Someone who's always, you know, talk about lust, you know, but the lusty desire to serve Krishna. It's always just like intense. Or like greed, you know, intense greed to have something. I must have it. You know, see the little kid sometimes who was asking for something and he throws a fit. So imagine if that fit went on for his whole life. And that's Raganuga Bhakti. I must have it. That's lolium, or intense greed. Anyway, so does that answer the question? It's actually funny that just thinking about how relationships in this world start with Raganuga and they end with Vaidhi. Did you ever think about that before? Yeah, it's the banyantry, the upside-down banyantry from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It starts with Raganuga. That is so interesting. So, Hrishikesh. That's right. Yeah. Well, that's why it has to be confirmed. Yes, because out of the devotee's humility, one will think, I'm not qualified. That's true. So therefore, it has to be confirmed by higher authorities. You know, one reveals their mind. That's the principle of guhyam akyati prichati, revealing the mind in confidence. You know, I'm feeling this attraction for, you know, for whatever. Just like I give the example of when I first took up Krishna consciousness, you know, I felt the attraction to be a coward boy. But it was very premature. It was like the first day in the Hare Krishna movement. It was because, you know, I had joined the movement with some friends who happened to join like 2 days later than me. And we were just like buddies and we were taking care of cows before. So therefore, we projected our material consciousness or activities upon the realm of the absolute. And then we thought like that. So obviously, if I had gone to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you know, I think I'm a coward boy, Prabhupada would say, do something practical. You understand? So therefore, when we reveal our minds, that's why we need the Association of Advanced Devotees. We reveal our minds, and then advanced devotees can tell us, you know, hey, wake up, smell the roses, so to speak. Good question. Yeah, that's how you know. But naturally, a pure devotee will think, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his poem Gopinath, Mama Nivedana Shuno, Vishaya Durjana, I'm a materialistic rascal. So a pure devotee thinks like that. You can't. A pure devotee is not thinking, hey, I'm a pure devotee. I got it made. You know, ready to roll here, you know. Bring it on, you know. I think the more you advance, hopefully the more humble you get. The more you understand that you don't understand. Actually, there's that statement. Who is it, from Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma? Others may say they understand Krishna, but I don't, you know. I think there's something like Vyasa may understand or he may not, you know. I forget the exact quote there. Yeah, Lord Brahma. I think it was Lord Brahma who said that. So, you know, that's the humility of the devotee. And how can we actually understand Krishna anyway? He's Ananta. He's unlimited. Even Ananta Shesh can't understand Krishna. And he has unlimited heads, so what to speak of us. Okay. Any other questions from anybody here? Yes, Krishna Priya. Yeah.
But my question is ultimately, since in Kali Yuga, the main method of sacrifice is
Sankirtan.
So, aren't we, in order to actually come to these higher states of devotional service, don't we
Yes. Well, actually, I did mention when I was describing Nava Bhakti, Nectar Devotion, that hearing is essential for everything. You can't do any of the other processes without hearing, because if you don't hear, you won't know how to serve, you won't know how to remember, you won't know how to serve the lotus feet, you won't know how to become a friend of Krishna, you won't know how to surrender everything to Krishna, you know, unless you hear. So here is the hearing is the absolute essential item of all the nine processes of devotional service. And of course, when you hear, you naturally chant. I mean, you can't avoid chanting when you hear, and then you naturally remember. I think Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, I would say, have to be done by everybody, those first three processes. And you can't do any of them without doing all three, especially in Kali Yuga. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. And then you could do Archanam, Vandanam, like Sakyams, like this, Padasevanam. Okay, I think we had just one announcement for all you online. And next week, we're going to have a, hopefully if the weather holds up, a festival here beginning at 5 o'clock. It's, I don't know what it is. But anyway, it's a celebration, what's called a Vyasa Puja. So that's going to be at 5 o'clock next week. Hopefully we're going to do it outside so we can have more people here. And everyone, depending on the weather, everyone's invited to come. And we're going to be having it online, of course, on Zoom and on Facebook. But it may be an opportunity or the last opportunity during the good weather time for everybody to come and physically be here. There'll be a feast and some other things like that. That's just... for those of you online, that is just for the devotees in the United States. And those devotees in Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji, that's going to be at a different time on Tuesday online, which is going to be 3 o'clock in the morning, our time here. Don't remind me. 3 o'clock in the morning, our time here. 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday in the Brisbane area, and that same state. 6 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday the 27th. We're talking about the 27th. Tuesday the 27th in Sydney and in Victoria, New South Wales and Victoria and Australia. All right, 6 o'clock. 8 o'clock in New Zealand. 8 o'clock p.m. in New Zealand, the 27th, and 7 o'clock in Fiji. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Forgot about Europe. So Europe is going to be 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock Central European time. India will be, let's see, 12:30 in midday, 12:30 midday. Yeah. Perfect time except for here. What? Is what? The 27th of this month. That's, not this coming week, but the next week after that. But that's, but for everybody here, all you have to do is remember Sunday at 5 o'clock. Everybody in America, Sunday at 5 o'clock, Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Daylight Time, to be more precise. And for those overseas, a separate program for them, which will be at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I don't expect anybody except for me to be there at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's to give the devotees overseas the opportunity, because they're all locked in right now. In many countries, well, in Europe, the virus is increasing dramatically. In Australia and New Zealand, it's actually gone down, because they're pretty much completely locked out. They were locked down, and now they're opening up. In New Zealand, there's sometimes they go a week or two without one case, because they're an island country and they can isolate themselves from the rest of the world. Fiji's the same thing. Okay, on that happy note, we'll see everybody next week at 5 o'clock, and we'll have the festival here and also online. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai.